This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Forget the frustration of picking commerce platforms when you switch your business to Shopify, the global commerce platform that supercharges your selling wherever you sell. With Shopify, you'll harness the same intuitive features, trusted apps, and powerful analytics used by the world's leading brands. Sign up today for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/tech, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/tech.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Old Detroit has a cancer.
Three dead police officers, one critically injured.
The cancer is crime.
Although seriously wounded, Officer Frank Fredrickson escaped.
And it must be cut out before we employ the 2 million workers that will breathe life into this city again.
Fredrickson identified this man, Clarence Boddicker, unofficial crime boss of Old Detroit, now sought in connection with the deaths of 31 police officers.
You probably don't think I'm a very nice guy.
See, I got this problem.
Cops don't like me, so I don't like cops.
Okay, let's get out of here.
Sure.
Yep. It's starting to roll.
We get the best of both worlds.
Bring in the LED. Lock it down.
The fastest reflex of modern technology has to offer onboard computer-assisted memory and a lifetime of on-the-street law enforcement programming.
He's on.
It is my great pleasure to present to you RoboCop. Prime directives.
Serve the public trust, protect the innocent, uphold the law.
Hollywood science fiction is coming to life in Utah, where military scientists are working to develop exoskeletons that will one day provide U.S. soldiers with superhuman strength.
This is the bionic leg that can read your mind. When Zach Vauder wants to take a step, he thinks it, and it happens.
Some of the things, when you look at enhancements, we really don't know what it's going to mean.
That's actually attached to you, right?
Yeah, that's an antenna, a human antenna implant.
That little thing, that's a bug, an insect. It's part robot, part bug.
One particular cyborg sells chips people can implant inside their bodies.
Things that at the present time we believe are impossible suddenly become possible.
This guy is really good.
He's not a guy, he's a machine.
Hello and welcome to Science-ish. I'm Rick Edwards, joined as ever by Dr. Michael Brooks.
Hello.
Your turn this week. What are we going to be taking apart?
Well, amazing that we haven't done this already, because it is a stone-cold, science-fueled classic.
Mm-hmm.
It's RoboCop.
Yes! Yes!
I mean, that is the right reaction.
I feel like I've mentioned RoboCop a lot over the last 5 years.
I don't know about that, but I mean... I've definitely thought about it a lot.
It's one of my favourite films.
Yeah, I'm excited about this. I really am. Genuinely, just a really good film. It's well done. It doesn't pretend to have like whizzy, you know, CGI or anything like that. It's done with stop motion, some of
yeah,
it.
Yeah, stop motion. I think it's really characterful. I love all the stop motion stuff. It doesn't really take you out of it. It's just quite funny. Also, I was genuinely mortally offended when we were talking about doing this episode. And Eli, our producer, emailed and said, also, there's a 2014 remake. I don't know, that's quite good. I don't know if you've... I was like, would you... How dare you? saw it in the cinema. I'm a fan.
Questioning your credentials like that.
Yeah, very. I mean, I think I've seen the original RoboCop probably double figures.
Really?
I think so, yeah. It's one of those, you know, there's not that many films, but if it's on, I'm just like, great stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. When you catch it halfway through on, yeah.
Yeah, but that's the thing, because I know it's so wide. It doesn't matter at what point I pick it up.
Yeah.
At all.
No, no. So do you think there are people out there who haven't seen it?
Well, I pity them. But just in case, give a little synopsis.
All right. Basically, it's set in a dystopian future.
Murphy transferring in from Metro South.
Police officer Alex Murphy gets killed by a gang, shot repeatedly. He gets his arm shot off in spectacular style.
Well, give the man a hand.
It is worth saying that throughout this film, it's really bloody.
Yeah.
Like, it's really,
but in a good way.
Gruesome.
Yeah. There's a company called Omni Consumer Products who are basically running the police force at this point.
Omni Consumer Products. What a bunch of morons.
OCP.
They claim his body, turn him into a cyborg, obviously, you know, who becomes known as RoboCop.
Thank you for your cooperation. Good night.
And there he goes on to fight crime, but also has these kind of, you know, moments, spoiler alert, of PTSD from his previous existence.
There's a heartbreaking line in there.
Heartbreaking might be going a bit far, Rick. I think you're quite invested.
I am invested. I genuinely think it's quite a sort of, it's quite a bleak film. And there's a bit where he says, as RoboCop, Murphy, because he sort of talks about himself in the third person because he doesn't really feel like he's Murphy anymore. Yeah. And he says, Murphy had a family. I can feel them, but I can't remember them.
Oh, yeah.
He's just like, oh,
it's a good line.
It's a great line.
Yeah.
That's poetry.
Yeah.
But it hurt me.
You are a fan, aren't you?
I am a fan. I'm a real fan of this film. And I think there's loads of interesting tech stuff. So what's our big question going to be then?
So, I mean, no surprise here, but our big question is, will we all inevitably become cyborgs?
Have we tracked down an absolute G to answer it?
Well, actually, we've got the original cyborg. We've got...
Peter Weller?
I don't even know who Peter Weller is. What are you talking about?
The guy who plays RoboCop.
Oh,
is he called Peter Weller?
No, it's not him. It's Professor Kevin Warwick, Professor of Cybernetics, and he's an emeritus professor at Coventry and Reading Universities in two places at once. I mean, he basically became known as Captain Cyborg back in 2002 when he wired his nervous system to the internet.
Massive, how's he?
He's huge. Massive,
yeah. What have you been up to? Ah, just, you know. Wiring the old nervous system into the internet. Any good to you?
I tell you what, you wouldn't have needed to ask him because it was in all the papers at the time. And I think, actually unfairly, so here's my first opinion of the episode.
Oh, lovely.
I really think people were taking the piss massively. They were saying, oh, you know, this guy's just like showboating. I think it was really unfair because what he was doing was saying, look, here's the technology, here's where it's going, here's what we can do right now, let me show you. Rather than just writing abstract papers about it and sort of talking about it in theory.
You like him because he's a doer.
He's a doer. And I think there's not enough of that in academia. I think there's not enough people willing to basically experiment on themselves and say, here comes the future. This is what it is. I'm sort of putting myself on the line here.
And it is easier to, get people talking if you show them.
Yeah.
And you go, well, look, I've done this.
Yeah.
I'm a nutter. What do you reckon? what did we start by asking him?
So we started by asking him how he defines a cyborg, as well as, you know, how much he thinks we're cyborgs already.
Well, cyborg is a cybernetic organism, so it's part human, part machine, or part biology, part technology. For me, personally, it's where you get enhancement. So the technology becomes part of the person, and you get extra abilities. We've already used technology, even bicycles or glasses, to improve our lot. But it comes to therapy, then we've integrated technology into the body to help with things like Parkinson's disease.
In an operation like this one, doctors place electrodes in the brain to fight misfiring cells with a higher frequency, which stops Parkinson's symptoms.
Heart pacemakers.
About 3 million people worldwide have pacemakers. They are small devices implanted under the skin to regulate the heartbeat.
But where it gets really exciting is with integrated technology that actually enhances our abilities. And there, that's where we're at the moment. I think the first research projects, the first experiments are undergoing now to improve how our brain functions with integrated technology rather than external.
On the Health Watch, an implant that merges the brain with artificial intelligence that's aimed at helping patients who have brain disorders.
You know, this sounds a little like science fiction, doesn't it? Elon Musk says the brain implant would connect to a computer or smartphone via Bluetooth and could be controlled with an iPhone app.
I think when you look at the human body, lots of organs we can help. Even the heart, you know, we now look at operating on in terms of electricity rather than just blood, pacemakers and so on. So we're using technology in all sorts of ways, the brain particularly. I think then there are other parts of the body, where with the liver, for example, where we still have sort of fairly limited extent to repair and rebuild. So it's a little bit piecemeal. Some parts of the body we could replace even now, and other parts of the body we've still got some way to go. I think the most difficult part of the body, most difficult organ in the body, clearly is the brain.
Now, as humans, we can identify galaxies light years away. We can study particles smaller than an atom, but we still haven't unlocked the mystery of the 3 pounds of matter that sits between our ears.
All other parts, you feel, well, at some point we're going to understand the physics, the biology involved, and we'll be able to replace or repair or use some technological version. But when it comes to the brain, it is an extremely complex organ where you're including all sorts of memories, connections, education, links to the outside world through the sensory input and so on. And it's very difficult to say, right, we're going to take this brain at this instant in time and replicate it or replace it or repair it in some way. So that, I wouldn't say it's impossible to look at that, but that's as close to impossible as you're going to get in terms of the human body. So the brain is the difficult one. Other, everything else is doable or will be doable in time, I believe.
Kevin mentioned that obviously there are quite a few of these technologies within our bodies and that kind of can operate alongside our organs,
yeah,
like cochlear implants or like a pacemaker or whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah.
But when it comes to actually replacing body parts, how much of the body have we figured out?
So back in 2013, there was a guy called Rich Walker who built a bionic man from everything that was available at the time.
You might have glimpsed him in the studio just now, the $1 million man, or rather a collection of artificial organs, synthetic blood and robotic limbs, all of which can be fitted onto or into the human body.
Now, you can put in things like prosthetic hands and ankles and feet. You can put in an artificial heart.
Yeah.
He had a cochlear implant in this thing.
Not only can he speak...
I feel exposed.
...talk to Rex, and he can listen.
Pancreas, spleen, kidney... some sort of functional circulatory system. I mean, kidney's not hard. We do that externally with a dialysis machine. Yeah. It's just a filter. He had a retinal prosthesis, so he could kind of see stuff. His body was a big Perspex box, so it didn't look so great.
Right.
But, you know, there was... you know,
did
there was
legs?
Yeah.
Okay.
Legs and ankles and feet and stuff.
Did it have a face? Great.
Had a face. Had the face of a guy who's sort of one of the pioneers of this field. And when he saw it, he was like, I don't like that.
Today,
it's your face, which is somewhat eerie.
Oh, I find it very, very awkward. I had a very hard time
dealing
with
once it. I mean, once company three's a crowd. I mean,
don't know why, but I immediately wanted to have the face of Bob Monkhouse. I don't know
really?
Why.
That's,
yeah, just that was the first one that popped into my head. I was
field.
Like, I'm going Monkhouse. But I guess you do choose whatever face you want.
Wow. So, I mean, it's quite easy in some respects to do some of these body parts. Like a heart is just it's just two pumps.
Just a pump, yeah.
Yeah. So that's not hard. As we said, the kidney is just a filtering system. Mm-hmm. So we've got that. You can get sort of circulatory systems. You can get retinal implants. So you can do all, so we're using those kinds of things.
But I suppose that the thing that brings everything together is the brain, isn't it?
Yeah, the brain we're not
doing. The operating system we haven't got.
And to be honest, the lungs we can't do either, because you know, the specialist material, effectively, that is lung tissue, is impossible to make. I mean, there's a massive surface area, and you know, porous membranes, so, you know, so you can get oxygen filtered out of the air. The things
what
like,
about the gut?
Yeah, is so you can tricky? Do a stomach. I mean, it's just a sack, isn't it?
No, but I mean,
mine is anyway.
But I mean the big old sack. I mean the sort of intestinal tract.
You can do that, yeah. I mean, you'd need kind of materials that...
I was going to say the materials
like tubing, and it's got to have certain properties. So, you know,
semi-permeable membrane.
Yeah,
stuff.
Supply of hydrochloric acid, so it's got to be resistant to that as well. Just need some, like, pumps to sort of squeeze it and pressure it so that you get all the nutrients pumped out of the food. Colon you can do, just, you know, again, that's squeezing water out of feces, isn't it?
Oh, lovely. I like it when you talk dirty to me. but we're doing okay on sort of like prosthetic limbs.
Yeah.
Is a success area, isn't it?
I mean, they're not perfect yet, but we're making progress with them. You know? I mean, the thing about prosthetic limbs is you want to be able to control them with your mind. You know, you want them to actually respond to you wanting to move them.
Yeah.
We can do sort of rudimentary stuff through a thing called myoelectricity. So this, it's basically the electrical signals that you can sense on the skin of the stump. So it actually sort of, you know, so brain signals and nerve signals will make their way through. And you get this sort of, you know, if you can pick up the field effectively on the end of the stump, then you can actually transfer that into some kind of motor control. You have to adapt your thought processes effectively so that you're sort of getting the right movement out. But, you know, as we've seen in other technologies, you can do that quite well.
Very adaptable.
Yeah, yeah. This thing called neuroplasticity, which means our brains can just sort of wrap around. So, yeah, I read a thing the other day about neuroplasticity in rats, which enabled them to drive cars, like little...
I saw that, actually. Yeah, it's good.
It's just amazing. And you just repurpose circuits of your brain. And we see this in, you know, in people with visual impairment. They will repurpose certain areas of the brain to be able to sort of improve senses in other ways. So myoelectricity sort of works, and there are prosthetics that take these signals and then use them to sort of move
create
the thing
outputs
to where you want it to be. They're not actually even that expensive. You can process them by off-the-shelf chips, and they just go to motors and actuators in the prosthetic. So kind of, you know, it's pretty good. You can even get 3D-printed, open-source kind of limbs that have this kind of technology.
That's cool.
So that's, you know, that's pretty good. I mean, the one thing you really need is a good fit between the stump and the prosthetic, because you've got to be able to pick up that field, and it's weak. It's not a strong amount of electricity.
So the connection is very important.
Yeah, so you've got to get that right. Then you've got the problem of touching, right, and sensation and stuff like that, which is really important. You sort of don't realize how important it is until you lose it, I think, is the sort of lesson that people learn from this stuff. There's nothing, you know, nothing like sort of putting your arm out and not feeling the table that you're putting it on. And it's not your arm. And then automatically it's like, oh, you know, this prosthetic is a prosthetic. And so, but people are starting to do this. The guy at Newcastle called Kianush Nazarpour, and he is engineering sensors into the fingers of prosthetics so they can detect temperature and pressure and shear force as well. So not just vertical pressure, but sort of sideways pressure. And that outputs to the stump skin effectively.
So it goes back the other way.
Yeah, so it goes back the other way. And it feels a bit like scratching and tickling to start off with. But people learn to sort of interpret it properly. It's almost like, you know, you grab a hot cup of coffee and you feel a certain thing, and then you start to learn that that's what hot feels like.
Yeah.
And then you don't even have to think about it once you've sort of
you're just
your
relearning it, yeah, aren't you?
Yeah, so that's pretty good. And there's a guy who's got a prosthetic who, using this arm, can feel 119 different touch sensations. So he's like got all these sensors in it, and it's not sort of, it's not mobile at the moment because it involves so much computing power. But basically allows him to do all kinds of tasks that he wouldn't be able to do using a normal prosthetic. Like, you know, can pick up eggs or grapes and feel like they're grapes and eggs and not smash them. He says, you know, using his arm, he can peel a banana. Weirdly, he said he can take his wedding ring on and off, but his own ring, which is like a bit weird thing to do, isn't it? I mean,
no, why?
No, that's because I mean, weird?
No, but in terms
my
of
my wife
like
gets very upset every time I remove my wedding ring.
No, but
I'm going to London again, are you?
Yeah, it's for science. No, but as a kind of an example of like fine motor skills, taking a wedding ring off and then putting it back on. I can see why that would
be. Yeah, anyway. So that was one of the...
just a handy test. All right, he's not going to Ibiza, is he? Getting on it. Well, we don't know.
We don't know.
Well, he isn't at the moment because there's too much computing. Yeah, you can't go into into Pasha with a supercomputer bolted onto your arm. Well, I mean, you can.
Maybe you can.
So the point is that we are...
So we're getting there.
So we're getting there now in 2020. But Kevin was wiring his nerves into the internet in 2002, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, isn't that incredible? So he wired himself up to the internet. Also got his wife involved as well. And they could have sort of, you know, non-conversations just by, you know, pulsing, you know, fingers or something and creating nerve pulses that would be transmitted to each other.
Oh, great to find another way to have an argument. Yeah. Good in public, though. Well, like, it doesn't look like you're arguing, but actually, the pulse is like, furious.
Yeah, two taps for "Shall We Leave Now" kind of thing. So yeah, he was right on this whole thing. And this was sort of one of the parts of his Project Cyborg.
Project Cyborg had two elements to it. The first was having an identification implant, a radio frequency identification, which identified me to the computer in my building. So as I moved around, the computer knew where I was. We got it doing different things for me, like opening doors, switching on lights. It's really just to show what was possible when technology is inside the body, not acting in a therapeutic way, but acting in an information sense. The second part of Project Cyborg was the most exciting for me. Then I had my nervous system linked directly to the computer and then onto the internet. Signals from my brain, my motor signals, we were able to transmit across the internet. I went to New York and my brain directly controlled a robot hand in England. I could feel how much force the hand was applying. And so that part of the experiment, my brain was in one place on one continent, my body was somewhere completely different. And the important thing there is your body can be anything you want it to be. It doesn't have to be arms or legs. It can be buildings and vehicles or all sorts of things, anything that the technology is connected up to. One of the big things when we look at enhancing humans is how we communicate. I mean, to be perfectly honest, it's pretty pathetic at the present time. We have all sorts of highly complex signals in our brains, thoughts, feelings, emotions, and so on. And then when we want to communicate with someone else, we convert those signals to mechanical pressure waves. So why can't we communicate directly brain to brain? We'd be much, much better, much more powerful. What actually we've done with my implant and my nervous system, my wife also had electrodes pushed in her nervous system, and we did the basics. We sent signals from nervous system to nervous system in order to communicate. It was like a telegraphic communication between nervous systems, but it showed in principle, yes, we can do that. In future, I believe we'll be able to communicate in the same way, brain to brain, thoughts and feelings and images and emotions. I really feel just as the telephone and cell phones have completely changed interaction between humans, that will completely change how we are as humans. Those that can communicate by thought will have that ability to communicate.
When he talks about the potentially sort of life-changing, radically life-changing prospect of communication innovations, it makes me wonder what other stuff we could innovate with.
Yeah, so
in terms of biohacking.
Well, what we've seen so far is a sort of small range of people willing to do stuff, you know, experiment, like Kevin did. So people have done things like, there was a guy called James Young who lost his arm and he actually won a competition to get a sort of bespoke prosthetic arm with, you know, extra functionality.
Did he make a BBC Three show?
Yeah,
I think
so.
Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah, yeah.
Really interesting.
So he had a laser on his arm.
Yeah.
A USB port in the wrist. And he also had a mount for a tiny drone So he could, like, you know, send it off like a hawk, I guess.
Really cool.
But there's a guy, this is one of my favorites, who's a guy called Neil Harbison, who describes himself as a cyborg artist.
Hang on, is he the guy with the naughty antenna?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah. So this antenna basically detects UV and colour.
Yeah, yeah.
He only sees in black
and white. Right, okay, so he's grayscale.
So he's enhanced his sort of natural capabilities so that he can see a whole load of other parts of the spectrum, including UV. I really like this. So you know, for me, I wouldn't want a big antenna sticking out of my head, to be fair.
No.
But I like the idea of being able to see a bit more UV spectrum. You know when you see the bees all going for flowers because the bees detect UV.
Yeah.
It's like, I'd like to be able to see what the bees see. I also like Tiana Sinclair's MindWave technology, which is not implanted, so it's a headset you wear, but it basically reads your brain waves, and when you achieve a focus state, it can activate something. So she, there's this demonstration where she can make a little drone helicopter take off if she achieves the right focus. So so it's basically, you know, learning to control your brain waves, I think is quite cool. And I can imagine if there was an implant there rather than putting a headset on, implant that just does that and maybe activates something when you get to a certain... I mean, it's a bit like, you know, Empire Strikes Back, when you're trying to levitate the X-Wing fighter.
Mm-hmm.
Yoda's teaching Luke how to, you know, control mm-hmm. the Force. I mean, you know, call back to the Star Wars episode. But yeah. I mean, it's sort of, I quite like the idea that I can harness my brain power in that kind of
makes
way.
Makes me think of Matilda, really.
Does it?
Yeah.
We're on different levels,
but
aren't we?
I'm old school. Yeah.
So that's quite good. Then there's the iBorg. So there's a guy called Rob Spence who lost an eye and had it replaced with a digital camera.
How does it look?
A little bit weird.
Look quite cool. Does he look like the Terminator?
Sort of a bit cool, yeah. Yeah. People don't like it, though, because he records everything that's going on around him. So it feels really unnerving. It's a really interesting sort of interaction of, you know, cyborg, because that is proper cyborg.
Yeah.
If you've got a digital eye that's recording everything that's going on around you, that's exactly like RoboCop, right?
Yeah.
And people are uncomfortable with it. So if this technology sort of took off and became ubiquitous, actually, we'd have quite a big barrier to overcome in terms of people feeling like this was okay. It's like holding your iPhone up. If you imagine just going through your life, like recording everything that's, you know, going on in front of you,
yeah,
people wouldn't like it. Anyway, so that's the kind of thing you can do. I'm not sure I'd want all of those, but some of these technologies I would quite want.
Yeah, what would you have then?
I would definitely have, actually not on the list I've talked about, a magnetic sense. I mean, just give me a compass in my head, please. Then I won't get lost and I know which way I'm sort of pointing, and just be able to, I don't know, sense the magnetic field of the earth and sort of...
It doesn't feel outlandish because we know that birds can probably do it.
Yeah, and I can do it through my phone.
Sharks?
Yes. Loads of animals do it, but it's not the same, is it? If it's not intrinsic to you.
So if we do go down the... And I'm not entirely sure that we will, but if we do go down this route of sort of biohacking and transhumanism, what might we look like in a long time in the future? Well, am I going to look like RoboCop?
Yeah, because, I mean, we haven't even mentioned exoskeletons, right? So people are going to be wearing exoskeletons that give them support, strength. I don't see the point. I can't imagine when I really want an exoskeleton. I mean, with your knee being fucked.
I'd love one. Also, your knees are fucked.
Yeah, but they're better now.
Are you playing football?
No, never
again. But if you had the exoskeleton, you'd be able to play football.
No, I don't think I would, though, would I?
Well, it depends how good
I mean,
they
do you see how clunky RoboCop was when he moved?
Yeah.
It was so terrible. I mean, he's playing left back and nowhere else. So exoskeletons, maybe mind implants, or I think people are likely to be wearing headsets or something like that. But that's only the same as wearing like a smartwatch now, isn't it, really? You know, so we're talking about having implants maybe that can read all your body stats. But people kind of get a lot of that just from wearable technology. So
yeah,
I don't know. I mean, I wouldn't go for an implant for anything that I can wear. That's what it comes down to, I think.
But I suppose the thing of the headset is how effectively it can communicate with your brain if it
isn't
getting up close and personal.
Yeah, I mean,
like if it's just hovering around the edge.
I don't feel the need for that. Those aren't the things that, for me, are the sellers. I want enhanced senses. I quite like the idea of that. But, yeah, just, you know, don't mess with my brain.
No, don't mess with your sweet, sweet brain.
Exactly. So, I mean, this is one of the things that we asked Kevin was what all this might look like sort of in the future and whether I'm going to need to be augmented in this way, because maybe I don't want it, but maybe I'll just feel like I'm getting left behind.
By AIs.
Exactly.
I think we look at what's possible, augmentations, enhancements for the human body. Some of them, I think, are more obvious, that people like having different sensory inputs that we haven't got at the moment, maybe having arms and legs. You know, why not have 10 arms or 20 legs or whatever, what that means. Some of the things, when you look at enhancements, we really don't know what it's going to mean. Things that at the present time we believe are impossible suddenly become possible.
Will robots take our jobs or work alongside us? How soon will technology radically change the workforce?
The world's first 100% robotic bar opened in Las Vegas in June. It's a novelty, but also a warning sign.
Artificial intelligence and expanded automation could potentially cause violence in this country.
I think it's an interesting question when we look at the future. Will we have to compete with machines? That's a strong possibility. I think with the intelligence of machines increasing in some cases, not all machines, but in some cases, particularly if we defer to them more, they're given more powers, more capabilities and so on. To be honest, there is a danger there that we, you know, we open up Pandora's box and it takes over. The machines take command. We have to really watch what we're doing. It's not right to say, oh, yeah, it's all programmed and it will do what we want. That's complete and utter rubbish, and no one should believe anybody that says anything like that. There are dangers we've got to watch and be wary about. In terms of cyborgs, I think we've got the distinct possibility of a digital divide coming in. Clearly, as a cyborg, part human, part technology, you will have abilities that are way beyond those of humans. That's why we're doing it. That's why the development is there. And as a human, you're potentially going to be left behind. I can't really see those humans stopping the progress. That's just not how it works. And there will be people such as myself and many, many others that want to integrate with the technology and have whole new raft of capabilities and mental abilities, particularly, that we don't have at the moment. But how the different, what then become species, actually cohabit, I really can't see. It's very difficult to see that.
I don't know where to start here. I think I'm going to start with the age-old question. Why not have 10 arms and 20 legs?
I mean, you can already get a third thumb. So there's a thing where you can buy a third thumb that you stick on your hand on the other side, obviously, from the other thumb.
Yeah.
And you control it with your foot. So you can like basically grip things from the other side as well by changing the pressure on a foot pad.
So double opposable thumbs.
Yeah. I'm surprised evolution hasn't come up with that.
I mean, it doesn't feel essential, does it? but yeah, I mean, I genuinely never considered going full sort of octopus plus.
Honestly, I mean, neuroplasticity must have its limits as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot to get your head around, isn't it? I suppose you build up gradually.
Yeah.
Okay, one more leg, another leg. Oh, new arm.
But where are you keeping these legs exactly? I mean, we're not built to have like extra legs.
I'm imagining, and this sort of doesn't make it any more or less creepy, but they're much smaller. They're scaled down. So you've got your main arms and legs, and then you've got like little like child's arms. and then you're trying to tell people that actually you're part of like the superhuman race. Like, no, this is what we look like.
Go over in the corner and talk to the guy with the antenna on his head.
It's a great vibe. The more sort of sobering stuff he was talking about there is the possibility of it driving inequality. And you can certainly see that where suddenly you've just got it's the classic problem. We've spoken about it a lot. Just rich people getting these great like enhancements or benefits, and then people who aren't rich getting left behind, and then that gulf widening.
I kind of disagree. in that I think these things are going to come in so slowly. It's almost like saying, oh, you know, you can't have smartphones because not everyone can have smartphones. And gradually, everyone gets smartphones. I mean, for me, I'm thinking a bit like, you know, talking about human enhancements, right?
Mm.
Wearing glasses.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one third of the world, 2.5 billion people, does not have access to eye care to give them proper vision.
Yeah.
None of us are saying, oh, we shouldn't wear glasses because, you know, not everyone can have glasses. And I think it's, I don't know, maybe it's a similar thing. It's like, it's going to happen. It's gradually going to trickle down. And, you know, maybe you lose an eye and you get a digital eye put in and that's fine. It freaks people out a bit. And there will be people who choose to have that digital eye, and that's not giving them a huge advantage in life as
yet.
No,
sure.
It's just sort of, and the NHS isn't paying for it. So, you know, they're making decisions to do that kind of thing. And I don't think the enhancements are going to be so serious that they're going to drive massive inequality very suddenly. That's my take on it.
Well, I guess you're right if we're just talking about stuff that fundamentally is affecting our physical capabilities.
Yeah. I mean, just because I can see UV and jizz in a hotel room.
Yeah. It's a rubbish superpower. But yeah, I think the bit that's difficult is brain enhancement. And that feels like that's probably not going to happen in the near future anyway.
I mean, that's going to happen through drugs, isn't it? Probably,
yes,
more than anything else.
Well, and I guess it is happening through drugs. But that is where you start entering bigger problems, I think, if you start massively increasing people's personal computing power.
Although, as I said, I don't feel the need for it yet.
You know,
I like to think that these kind of things will be used first for, you know, dementia patients and things like that. So, you know, I think to start to worry early about these things is just unnecessary. I think hopefully, you know, these will enhance people's lives where their mental facilities have been downgraded.
Right. But I don't think it's ever too early to talk about potential pitfalls. I don't think that's a problem.
All right, you can talk about it, but let's not wring our hands too far.
No,
you
know? Fine. Yeah. Well, I've too many hands to wring.
Yeah, I mean, you can imagine.
It'd take me hours.
You're wringing 40 hands.
And you've got to do all the permutations. Every hand's got to wring every other hand.
What's that, 40 factorial?
Oh, that's a great image. And that's before we even got the extra thumbs involved. Going back to RoboCop, as I like to, he is, I think it's safe to say, having a pretty miserable time. Didn't choose to become RoboCop. Is there a danger that we might do stuff that isn't reversible, that can't be undone? So someone might have something and then be like, actually, this isn't for me, and then you're a bit screwed.
Yeah, I mean, people who are looking into this are looking, first of all, to get reversible technology. So the military, for instance, obviously are really interested in human enhancement because they want super soldiers.
Yeah.
But they also don't want the situation where they've done something to, you know, some of their soldiers that they can't reverse. Uh-huh. They don't want the sense that some of these soldiers are, you know, like a special brigade where the other, you know, that kind of creates a kind of two-tier soldier system, if you like. So what they want is, you know, to be able to put on a technology or have an operation to put something in and then it be able to also being able to take it out, you know, because, you know, you can have, you know, a pacemaker put in, say, and taken out. So we know that we can do this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And you want people to be volunteering for that as well and not coerced into it, obviously, like RoboCop was. Was he? I mean, he's not even coerced because
really
he was dead.
It's dead, yeah.
But
very easy to coerce.
But I mean, I can imagine amongst the military, there'll be plenty of volunteers for this kind of thing. It's like, yeah, I'll do that. Super soldier. Jason Bourne-esque kind of, you know, hyper-intelligence.
Okay, good. Time for a rundown of our big question. We've asked a lot of questions, but the big question was, will we inevitably become cyborgs? And I suppose the answer is, in some way, yes, because it's already happening.
Yeah.
There's nothing to suggest that we're going to get less interested in doing it. There's lots of emerging tech, which is kind of on the fringes of kind of cyborg stuff anyway.
Yeah, I think it's a big yes. It'll be part of this anti-aging thing for a start. You know, there's a big move into sort of defeating all the symptoms of aging, and this is a huge part of that. Also, you know, if your knee gets mashed in a football tackle, say, and you're at the point in time where they say, well, you know, we could sort of try and rebuild it using bits of your hamstring to create a ligament or something like that. Or we could just give you this sort of robotic knee that's, you know, passed all the tests and works really well, and just implant, you know, a titanium knee that will never need servicing again. You're going to go for the knee, aren't you?
Oh, I'm taking a robot knee all day long.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So gradually going to go down this route, definitely.
And you're going to be out there with all your thumbs.
Hitchhiking like crazy.
Yeah, and blinking furiously. Trying to record everything.
I'm looking forward to this.
I know you are.
Nice shooting, son. What's your name?
Murphy.
Science-ish is a Radio Wolfgang production presented by me, Rick Edwards, and Dr. Michael Brooks. It was produced by Eli Block and Ivor Slayer-Manley. The executive producer was Harry Watson. Special thanks to Kevin Warwick. Please subscribe, rate and review wherever you listen to your podcasts. We're aiming to knock Brian Cox off the top of the science charts. You can also follow us on Twitter at science_ish. Bring it back to RoboCop. He needed one new arm, although then they lopped off the other arm. That's horrible.
Yeah, I love that scene.
That's
though.
Horrible.
It was like, no, get rid of that.
But
arm.
This one's fine. Doesn't matter.
And I think ultimately he's better for it, isn't he?
Yeah, I suppose so. But the point is, I guess that he has died, hasn't he? So they can just do what they like.
I mean, not total brain death though. Otherwise, he wouldn't have these sort of flashbacks. So I mean, going back to our Flatliners episode, you know, defying death. At what point is it okay to take this so-called dead police officer and turn him into a cyborg?
Why is that not our big question?
Because we've kind of been there. Go back to the Flatliners episode. You'll love it.